A newlywed pleads not guilty to killing her husband in Glacier Park. Good evening, I'm Connor Ballantyne.
And I'm Courtney Anderson, and that's our top story tonight on Montana Evening Edition.
Capitol reporter Dan Boyce looks into the difficulty Montanans are having signing up for Obamacare. And in our feature interview, News Director Sally Mock talks with creative consultant Andy Stefanovich about how to keep your business or organization inspired. A newlywed accused of pushing her husband off a cliff to his death in Glacier National Park after having second thoughts about her marriage has pleaded not guilty to murder charges. Jordan Lynn Graham appeared today in U.S. District Court in Missoula on a new federal grand jury indictment charging her with first-degree murder, second-degree murder, and making a false statement about the death of Cody Lee Johnson. Her attorney, Michael Donahoe, entered not guilty pleas on Graham's behalf. Donahoe said last month that Graham was acting in self-defense and Johnson's death was an accident. The Kalispell couple had been married for 8 days when Johnson disappeared July 7th. Graham would face a mandatory sentence of life in prison if she's convicted of first-degree murder.
And in other news from around the state, the U.S. Forest Service is shutting down timber sales on national forests across the country due to the partial shutdown of the federal government. Oregon Democrat Senator John Wyden said today he was informed of the move by Forest Service Chief Tom Tidwell. Forest Service spokesman Leo Kay confirmed the action in an email, but said details were not immediately available. It was not clear, for example, whether loggers could cut and haul off trees under contracts that have already been awarded, or whether the actions affect such sales that have yet to be awarded. Wyden says it will add to the economic hardship rural communities already face.
The Montana Highway Patrol says two people were killed and another was injured in a single vehicle rollover on Interstate 90 west of Butte. The patrol says the driver of an eastbound sport utility vehicle lost control when the vehicle crossed a bridge deck near Ramsey at about 6:45 this morning. The vehicle went into the median and rolled. A 60-year-old woman was thrown from the vehicle and killed. The 37-year-old man who was driving also died, while a 20-year-old woman was injured. The names of the victims have not been released.
A coroner's inquest is scheduled next month in a Billings police officer's fatal shooting of a burglary suspect who tried to drive off in a police car. The Yellowstone County Attorney's Office tells KULR-TV that the inquest into the January death of 29-year-old Daniel Brawley is scheduled for November 5th. Brawley and his wife were found in a house while the homeowner was out of town. Police arrested them, but Brawley was able to slip out of his handcuffs, get into the front seat of an idling patrol car, and drive away, hitting an officer. Officer Dave Punt fired 9 shots at the car. Brawley died of a gunshot wound to the torso. Bighorn County Coroner Terry Bullis will oversee the inquest, which is expected to last 2 days.
5 people who were accused of embezzling hundreds of thousands of dollars in federal stimulus aid from Montana's Chippewa Cree tribe have pleaded not guilty to 4 charges in a new indictment. Former State Representative Tony Belcourt, his wife Haley, and 3 others entered their pleas yesterday in U.S. District Court in Great Falls. They are accused of diverting some of the $33 million in federal funding the tribe received in 2009 and 2010 for construction of a water pipeline to the Rocky Boys Indian Reservation. Tony Belcourt is CEO of the Chippewa Creek Construction Corporation, which is leading the water pipeline project. The new charges are conspiracy to embezzle federal grant and contract funds, theft from an Indian tribal government receiving federal funding, and 2 bribery counts.
A 48-year-old Great Falls woman has denied causing the overdose death of her 1-year-old grandson this summer. The Great Falls Tribune reports Tracy Ann Harless pleaded not guilty yesterday to negligent homicide in the death of Riley Padilla. Court records say Riley died on July 28th of an overdose of narcotic pain medication, oxycodone, that would have been fatal for an adult. The boy's autopsy also indicated the presence of cocaine. Charging documents say a test of Harless's blood indicated she also had oxycodone and cocaine in her system. Prosecutors say Harless was babysitting her grandson the evening of July 27th while the boy's mother went to the fair.
A Marion man has pleaded not guilty to assault with a weapon after being charged with shooting a neighbor during an argument. The Daily Interlake reports 51-year-old Paul West entered his plea yesterday in district court in Kalispell. West is charged with shooting 34-year-old Jason Guyman at Guyman's house. Witnesses say a friend of Guymon's was riding a horse to Guymon's house when West confronted him and then followed him. Court records say Guymon came out of his house with a shotgun and the argument escalated. Both West and Guymon fired shots, although it was not clear if Guymon fired intentionally. Guymon was hit in the shoulder and side and underwent surgery in Kalispell before being transferred to a Seattle hospital. His condition yesterday was not known.
A group of past winners of the Teacher of the Year Award are coming out in support of the new Common Core Education Standards. Most schools in Montana are implementing the standards this year. The Board of Education decided 2 years ago to join most other states in embracing them. A statement released today by 21 past Teachers of the Year voiced support for the program. The supporters say the standards clearly explain what is expected of students at each grade level, and the curriculum teaches critical thinking over memorization. Some opponents argue the nationally developed standards trample on local control of schools. The state has asked the federal government for permission to test based on Common Core standards rather than the No Child Left Behind law.
Montanans trying to log on to the online marketplace for the Affordable Care Act are still having access issues 3 days after it opened up. The federal government is operating the marketplace for Montana and 33 other states that opted not to do it themselves. Capitol reporter Dan Boyce says it's not clear when the technical problems will be resolved.
Helena substitute teacher Claudia Crace has been living overseas for the past 5 years. She recently came back to the States and does not have health insurance. She did her research on plans and was waiting on October 1st to sign up for Obamacare.
So I wasn't able to look at anything, and I'm primed and ready. I need insurance, and I was pretty disappointed.
All right. Right now, I'm going to try to get on Montana's Obamacare online marketplace. So let's see here. I type in healthcare.gov. I see the health insurance marketplace is open. Okay, great. We have a green apply now button. Let's hit that. Choose my state, Montana. Apply now. And I see a page that says, we have a lot of visitors on the site right now. Please stay on the page.
It isn't probably the best opening that we could have had, but we knew there were going to be glitches.
That's Montana's Deputy Commissioner of Securities and Insurance, Adam Schaefer. His office is trying to keep the public informed about the state's marketplace, which he points out is not facilitated by the state. The 2011 legislature turned down Securities and Insurance Commissioner Monica Lindeen's request for a state-run exchange.
We'd love to say that we would have had this thing up and running and it would have had minimal glitches had we had complete control of this, but it's the federal government's marketplace and, you know, it's their responsibility to work through the glitches.
The federal Obamacare marketplace has been plagued with these glitches since it opened. Schaefer says government officials attribute the problems to overwhelming interest in the site. Is anybody in Montana getting on at all?
We've had reports of people getting through. It's definitely, you know, a lot of frustration, you know, even with us that, you know, these glitches are causing problems.
Schaefer says he's confident these kinks are going to get worked out. The commissioner's office encourages people to have patience and wait a little while before going back to the site.
You know, the enrollment process goes through March of next year. If you need a policy that starts effective January 1st, you have up until December 15th.
Helena resident Claudia Crace feels like these types of glitches would have been really easy to plan for.
I hate to be a cynic, but I was really hoping that it was going to be pretty easy. And now I'm not sure how it'll go. But yeah, I've got to get back on and look.
Whenever the time comes that she can get back on and look. I'm Dan Boyce reporting at the Capitol.
State health officials are urging Montana residents to get flu shots this year. As incentive, they're offering these statistics from last year. There were more than 10,500 laboratory confirmed or suspected cases of flu during the 2012-13 influenza season. 361 people were hospitalized, and the deaths of 15 people were directly attributed to the flu. The Department of Public Health and Human Services says for every reported case, there are 3 to 5 that go unreported. Influenza is a contagious respiratory illness that usually comes on suddenly and may include fever, headache, extreme tiredness, dry cough, sore throat, runny nose, and stuffy nose with muscle aches. DPHHS Director Richard Oppert tells the Billings Gazette that the vaccine protects the recipient and prevents them from spreading the virus to others who might be more vulnerable.
A Tyrannosaurus Rex skeleton unearthed in Montana in 1988 looks like it'll be staying in Big Sky Country a little longer due to the government shutdown. The Wankel T. Rex was scheduled to leave the Museum of the Rockies at Montana State University in Bozeman next Friday and be trucked across the country to the Smithsonian Institution in Washington, D.C. on a 50-year loan. The Museum of the Rockies had requested a Federal Express semi-trailer to haul the fragile cargo. Today, the museums and the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers announced the transfer would be postponed. The Smithsonian is closed during the shutdown. Museum of the Rockies Marketing Director Mark Robinson has said if the move is delayed, it might have to wait until spring when the roads are better.
Montana State veterinarian says the livestock disease brucellosis has been found in another cattle herd in the Yellowstone area, the second such case in just over a week. Veterinarian Marty Zalewski said test results received today from a federal animal health laboratory confirmed the infection in a bull from a herd of about 550 cattle in Park County. Brucellosis can cause pregnant cattle to prematurely abort their young. It's been largely eradicated in the U.S., but persists in wildlife from the Yellowstone region of Montana, Idaho, and Wyoming. Another case was confirmed in a Madison County cow last month. The disease has since been found in two more cows from that 1,100 animal herd. Texas last month adopted rules requiring additional brucellosis testing of breeding cattle imported from the Yellowstone area.
Five members of a northern Montana Hutterite colony and the colony itself have pleaded guilty and were sentenced in a case involving the September 2012 deaths of two grizzly bears. The Great Falls Tribune reports U.S. Magistrate Judge Keith Strong ordered Sam and Daryl Kleinsaucer, along with Jonathan, Ike, and Tom Waldner, and the colony to pay just over $19,000 in restitution. Strong also ordered the Ponderé Hutterite colony to pay a $20,000 fine for two counts of misdemeanor possession of an endangered species. Daryl Kleinsaucer was fined $2,000 for the two counts, while the others were fined $1,000 each. The men were not charged with killing the bears. They said the bears died of exhaustion as they chased them out of a cornfield and they buried the carcasses.
Conservationists are appealing a federal judge's rejection of their lawsuit in Nevada aimed at shutting down a U.S. program that spends $100 million a year nationally to kill coyotes, mountain lions, and other predators that threaten livestock. U.S. District Judge Miranda Dew dismissed in March most of the Wild Earth Guardians claims the program is illegal because it relies on outdated scientific data, most of it two decades old. But Dew said, among other things, shutting down federal operations in Nevada wouldn't provide the critics any relief because the state indicated it would do the work itself. Wild Earth's appeal to the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals says Nevada doesn't have some of the resources to continue all the work. State wildlife spokesman Chris Healy told the Associated Press today they probably are right.
Businesses and organizations have to be innovative and creative to survive, but that maxim is easier said than done. Part of Andy Stefanovich's job is to help companies and organizations achieve that. Stefanovich is a creative consultant who has worked with many large, well-known clients like GE, Disney, and the U.S. Olympic Committee, and written several books about innovation. He was in Missoula this week to address the annual conference of the Montana Nonprofit Association. In this feature interview, Stefanovich talks with news director Sally Mock about his philosophy that people should, quote, look at more stuff and think about it harder.
I was asked years and years ago by a Wall Street Journal reporter what my definition of creativity was, and I said, well, it's abstract, and it's moving, and it's the weather, and it's Buddhism, and it's anything but being able to be tying it down. And so, but I said, if I was forced to say one thing that I think creativity is, it's really looking at more stuff, being open to more of the world, and kind of opening your kind of frame of reference to see more, be inspired more, observe more, absorb more, and then thinking about it and doing something with that. So I said, look at more stuff and think about it harder. And the next day it was in print and it became our website and became a mantra and really much more of a philosophy. But it's a good one. It's an easy one for people to access. And I think this topic needs those easy on-ramps. It's not – we don't need to overcomplicate this idea of thinking about things in unique ways.
Because I feel like, I'll just be honest, I look at too much stuff already.
Yeah. No, there's no question. And so as a curator, I talk a lot about curation. And my job as a curator for executives or for companies or for institutions is to really edit the excellence of the world, find the best things that help them see their world differently. And so take the best of the world and put it in front of a person or an organization so that they can, in fact, use that source of inspiration to see through it as a lens to see their world in a different way. Example, Yeah, so I believe in this idea of human library, and I believe that everybody is a book, and that if you're not a big reader, you don't have to read. You can just check people out, and it's a Scandinavian – it's actually it's a Danish idea from the 1800s where there was – 1600s, I'm sorry, and there was a thing called the human library, and you would walk into this physical building, and the human library was filled with people of different sex beliefs and different political beliefs and economic beliefs and all the way across the board, and you could check them out and actually have a conversation with them as a book. And so as a way to curate, I now find interesting people, whether it's an ethnographer or a military general or a theater person or a policeman or otherwise, and I have that source of content talk to the audience. And then I say, as the curator, I've put something in front of you to say, so I heard them say, so what that might mean to me. And so people can be content, and people can be something that you curate in terms of editing a great group of people to be putting in front of another group of people so they can see and hear their story for different effect.
How do you get people to be open to that? Because that's the other trick, isn't it?
Yeah,
we're all so comfortable being around everybody who thinks and looks the way we do.
Yeah, I think that's a great question. I think the reason why people are more receptive is because when you go outside, I believe that there are kind of three ways of looking at more stuff. It's direct, indirect, and tangential. And direct is if you're a pharmaceutical company and I brought in a bunch of pharma executives or pharma R&D people or people in the medical space, they'd say, I know, I've been around, I'm familiar with, and this is my world. And if you go indirect, it might be people in business or industry, and they'll say, well, I understand how business works, and I understand how industry works, and I understand how supply chain works, and you can kind of go to those equations. But if I bring in tangential, it might be an artist, or it might be a theater person, or it might be a culinary expert. And so by looking so outside of yourself, you can't reference it back to the world in which you know so well. So you look at it purely, and then when the simple question's asked, how might I take what I learned from them and apply back to me, you don't have qualifiers on top of it, because it's not an easy one-to-one reciprocity kind of equation. It's kind of, they're so outside of me that I can use them as a way to be inspired to look more closely at who I am.
And inspiration's key, right? You believe inspiration is really the lifeblood of everything.
I really do, and you present that beautifully. I do think it's the lifeline of everything. And I was actually coming back from a radical sabbatical. I spent a month every year with my family in New York, and we were driving down 95, and we were just going through D.C. And I said, Jill, I just got to stop and talk to a friend who works at HCA, the big healthcare institution. And I walked in and I said, Marge, I'm just thinking about the idea of how inspiration is really important. And I had been creatively consulting her and innovatively consulting her and her team for several years. And she said, it's everything, because inspiration is the fuel that you actually create off of to innovate off of. And so inspiration is the fuel, and by virtue of that fuel, you then can create, and by creating, you will innovate or manifest something. So it doesn't have to be linear, because it is more of a holistic equation, but inspiration is that kind of intangible that we often overlook. And when you look at executives or companies or organizations that want to create, they'll often kind of just say, let's go into the creative session. But with no new inputs, you won't get a new output. And so no new inspiration, no new output, because you're looking at the same things in the same way. It's kind of obvious to me, and kind of an epiphanic moment when the executives see how this outside stuff helps them see.
I want to read something you've said about the mood of a company, or it could be an organization, I'm sure, too. And what you said about that is, it's important to foster the right mood at the company when you walk into the place. Does it feel like great things can be created here?
It's, I think, the most vital role of a leader. And I was at the Montana Nonprofit Association event this morning, and Liz, the executive director, stood up and she created the right mood. She was comical and kind and empathetic, and in context of everyone in the room, she was completely in the moment. She wasn't reading a script. She was being herself and being present. And the entire mood from minute two was created and conditioned for the next 2 days in which they'll encounter, because Liz created the mood. And a leader's job is to really do a few things: tell great stories, capture good stories, and retell those stories, and to create the mood. And when they walk in an organization, it's their job to almost put their finger in their air, almost gauging the mood or the weather, and actually move the weather pattern in order to be the weather pattern it needs to be. I can vividly remember driving into my organization play for many, many years. And as I drove in and walked past all the cars of the associates, because I parked at the last parking spot as opposed to the first parking spot to give them the closer ones, I'd walk by all of their cars. And as I walked by all of them, I was thinking about who was in the office already and what mood they might be in based on what soccer game they had with their children the night before, what fight they might be on their spouse, what deliverable they didn't get out the day before to the client. And I'd have a understanding of what mood might be in the room before I walked in the room. And then when I walked in, I'd feel it. And then I'd adjust accordingly to make it a better mood. If leaders just did this, it would set and release so much potential in an organization and its culture. It's staggeringly obvious, but people don't do it.
You talked about being present. Another thing you have said, and I'll quote, is, I wish more people were real. I wish more people would allow themselves to be themselves.
I just got done talking to some students here at the university, and one of the girls, I said, so in 30 seconds, give me a feedback on what you guys heard me say in the last hour. And she said, I'm glad you gave me permission to be myself. And I teared up, and she teared up, and I said, I only want you to know one thing from this last hour is that everybody in the world wants you to be more of who you are. And forever, anyone who holds you at bay for not being who you are or doesn't allow you to be who they are, shame on them. Because all I want from you as a young person that can change this world is to be authentic and be yourself. Be authentic and be yourself. And I said it 10 times. And I think that not enough people have that gift that my mom and dad gave me. I am completely aware of all that I am not good and not good at and not aware of. And sometimes out of turn on. And I'm also very aware of things I'm really great at and things that I'm really conscious of and things that I do well, because they just made me authentic to who I am and who I'm not. And so I get to walk into that every day with a headwind as opposed to a tailwind as opposed to a headwind. And people that aren't authentic face a very, very difficult day. It's a tough day. And so I just wish for that. And my biggest thing I want for my two children that are 10 and identical twins is the fact that they just grew up that way.
Well, I have been speaking with the very real Andy Stefanovich. He's a creative consultant here to speak to the Montana Nonprofit Association Conference. Andy, fun to talk to you. Thank you.
Thank you very much. I'm honored to be on the program and love your programming.
Now for tonight's weather forecast for West of the Divide. Tonight I expect mostly clear skies with lows in the 20s. Tomorrow will be mostly sunny with highs in the 50s to lower 60s. Sunday look for mostly sunny skies in the morning, then becoming partly cloudy with highs in the upper 50s to mid 60s. For central Montana, tonight calls for mostly clear skies with lows around 25 to 35 degrees. Tomorrow expect sunny skies. Highs will be around 55 to 65 degrees. Sunday will be partly cloudy with highs around 65 to 75 degrees. For West winds, expect gusts up to 40 miles per hour. And for southwest Montana, tonight calls for mostly clear skies with lows in the lower 20s. Tomorrow will be sunny with highs around 45 to 55 degrees. Sunday, expect mostly clear skies with highs around 50 to 60 degrees. And now for the editorial comments of Bob McKelvey.
The shooting death on the night of February 26, 2012, of Trayvon Martin, an unarmed 17-year-old African-American high school student, by George Zimmerman, the 28-year-old neighborhood watch coordinator in a large Florida gated community, became the center of nationwide attention. Zimmerman had decided that Trayvon, walking through the grounds, was behaving suspiciously, hence followed and eventually approached him from behind. This resulted in an altercation between them, in which Zimmerman suffered a broken nose and then shot and killed the boy. Subsequently, Zimmerman was charged with murder, but was acquitted, essentially due to Florida's overexpansive stand-your-ground defense law. Indeed, the jury ignored the provocative nature of Zimmerman's decision to shadow the boy and focused instead on his claim that Trayvon had instigated the altercation while he had merely responded in self-defense. The subsequent national attention to this case focused on the allegation that Zimmerman's decision to track Trayvon Martin was essentially an example of racial profiling. However, Zimmerman had a past history of violent behavior, having been charged on one occasion with violently resisting arrest and on a second occasion for domestic violence. Both charges subsequently were dropped as first offenses. However, either charge, if retained, would have banned Zimmerman from legal possession of the gun with which he shot Trayvon. Hence, the tragic events of that evening may be viewed as resulting from the interplay of stand your ground, encouraged aggressive behavior, together with having set weak standards for permitting concealed carry of firearms. In 2009, Montana became one of 21 states that have followed Florida's lead in adopting stand your ground legislation. Ours is even more permissive of aggressive behavior than Florida's, since in a court trial here, the prosecutor bears the burden of proof to overcome the survivor's version of what happened. However, the development of Montana's current criteria for granting a citizen a right to carry concealed firearms is a much longer story, one that began with the adoption of Montana's first constitution in 1889. It contains the passage, "The right of any person to keep or bear arms in defense of his own home, person, and property shall not be called into question, but nothing contained herein shall be held to permit the carrying of concealed weapons." Thereafter, a long process began to change the interpretation of this passage, which seems to ban concealed carry, to mean only that concealed carry, while legitimate, is not constitutionally guaranteed. The first such law to guarantee was passed in 1919, but concealed carry permits were seldom granted, and in 1989, only 39 permits were extant. The movement to make them widespread and available to all law-abiding citizens began with new legislation passed in 1991 and strongly backed by the NRA and the gun manufacturers, working through their Shooting Sports Foundation. Since that time, a variety of gimmicks have been invented to make it particularly easy for anyone to conceal carry legally, thus raising the risk that some concealed guns will be easily available to individuals who are likely to abuse the privilege. This, of course, was the danger the Trayvon Martin killing illustrates. The upshot is that, while the vast majority of individuals who carry concealed firearms are law-abiding, any who do intend harm to others are in the mix and have the advantage of surprise. This includes, in particular, the perpetrators of most recent multi-victim shootings, who are especially likely to carry concealed semi-automatic handguns with large magazines, capable of spraying out 34 or more bullets in less than 15 seconds. There has been considerable discussion of late and concern over the knowledge that gun violence in the U.S. is so much greater, by a factor of 30 or more, than in similar economically advanced countries. Our tolerance for concealed handguns is largely responsible for this.
Bob McKelvey is one of several commentators on Montana Evening Edition. The views expressed do not necessarily represent those of the station. If you have a comment, you can send it via our webpage at mtpr.org or on Montana Public Radio's Facebook page. Montana Evening Edition is also archived on our website. I'm Connor Ballantyne.
And I'm Courtney Anderson. Thanks for listening and have a great weekend.